Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. For more information about the news and links we talk about on the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Welcome to our Everybody Coughs episode of Geeks On.
Welcome to the sick room, my geeklings.
Yes. We finally come back from nasty flu season.
Oh, my God. Okay, is anyone in this room actually healthy right now?
No.
I have a little bit of a cough, but, man, it's
because... Well, you were flat out on your back last week.
I was out.
Yeah. Same theory with me. I had a fever for, like, 3 days. I just couldn't get out of bed. Yeah.
I've been coughing for a month. I was sick a month ago. I've been coughing for a month.
Yeah, I got it right after you, Typhoid Mary. And I think you gave it to me.
When? Well, you should stop the tongue kissing.
Right after you got... Yeah, I know.
That's
such a shame. Flash, we're sorry.
Wrong!
But, yeah, I got it right after Pete, and then I had to do my show. That's a promotion, so you guys have to take a drink.
Wait, we should explain to the people who don't know what we're talking about. There's a new Geeks On drinking game.
Yeah, so I love that string.
They totally called us out on all
things. They totally nailed us.
Every time I get interrupted, drink.
Wait, what were you saying?
Every time
take a drink.
Yeah, they totally caught us on some bullshit.
Every time Matt self-promotes.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time,
take a drink.
What is it with Don?
Every time I bash on the Bush administration.
Okay. Or the Christian religion.
Every time Aaron has a rant.
Yeah.
And then what's the one? There's one where you take
drinks. I think if Aaron drops... Well, that's if Aaron comments on the length of the show.
Oh, take five drinks if Aaron comments on the length of the show.
I think if he drops the F-bomb, we should all just, like, dump the keg, you know?
Me?
Yeah.
You were the one dropping the F-bomb last time.
No, but you say...
I say F.
F.
I am pure as the driven snow. That's right. All I have to say on the matter.
But if you say F or a-hole, it actually draws more attention.
That's why I say it.
Oh.
A-hole.
Because it makes you then rationalize, what is he... Oh.
Ew. Well, anyway, welcome back, my geeklings.
You're here to waste another hour and a half of your life.
Actually, you know what? You remember the last time we had a new show, we talked about kids and violence and how video games affects kids.
Yes.
I actually have a treat for you guys. I now take back everything that I said.
Oh, really?
Because here's an audio clip for you. Now, let me explain what's going on. This was taken from an Xbox Live session that somebody happened to be recording.
Okay.
He was playing Rainbow Six.
Okay.
On Xbox Live, so he could routed all the people's conversations into an audio file.
Okay.
And he happened to be playing against this, like, 10-year-old kid.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Who then starts screaming at his mom. Okay? And that's what you'll be hearing. So when you hear gunshots and stuff going off, which you will hear...
It's the video game.
It's not
the 10-year-old kid opening fire on his mom.
Right. So ignore that. Pretty soon, the guy who's taping it stops shooting because he's so intrigued what's going on.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
Oh, my God.
You're messing me up! You're messing me up! You're messing me up, Doc! You're messing me up! You're messing me up! You're not in bed yet! Well, I need it as well! Mom, I need it up! Whatever! I need it up! Why will I have to get off? Why? That's stupid. You always do that all the time. You never let me play it. You have to get off, get off. You have to get off. Time to get off. I'm going to bed. Time to get off. Turn it down. You never let me have it up loud. This weekend, you're like, yo, it's not, during the weekend, you're going to up as loud as you want. So we can right now. So I get it up as loud as I want. Why? 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 Okay. Why? Why? I want to play. But that, still, that doesn't mean that I should have to get off. No, that's bull. I want chocolate milk, not this. He said that he didn't bring me a drink. I don't want a Mountain Dew. I want chocolate milk now. I want chocolate milk now. I want chocolate milk now. Why? That's what I want. Why can't you get it? Yes. Mom, get it. Get it. Get down. Please get it. Why? That's bullshit. You said you're getting it, but you didn't. Why? No. You said you'd give me whatever I wanted to drink. Now I said I'm not giving it. Now I want chocolate milk. You're mean! You bitch! What? I want some fucking chocolate milk. Why would I get in trouble? You said you'd bring me whatever I wanted to drink, and now you won't. That means you're lying. No. Bring me chocolate milk. Why? I want some motherfucking chocolate milk. I don't have to get up. You said that you'd get it for me. Why? That's bullshit. That's bullshit. That's fucked up. I don't have to do shit. That's bullshit.
Oh my god.
Beat that kid's ass until he bleeds.
I have never heard a clearer argument for postnatal abortion in my life.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that kid needs an ass whooping.
That kid needs to be like, all right, son.
That parent needs an ass whooping.
That parent needs an ass whooping.
Because if you let your kid talk to you that way, which clearly she is.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, a lot of people don't spank your kid.
Oh no, I say
I'll spank your child.
Yeah.
Put him.
Give me your address. I will fly out to you and spank your child.
Now, did you hear that she brought him a Mountain Dew, and then he decided that he wanted chocolate milk?
Well, he said he wanted chocolate milk originally, and brought him a Mountain Dew.
No. He said, I said I wanted Mountain Dew, but I changed my mind. Now I want chocolate milk.
Oh, my God. I didn't even get that.
Yeah, that's what happened.
I was too busy listening in horror.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
That kid needs his ass.
Now, the funny thing about this, is actually an audio clip that's on, you can do a search for. He had the whole Rainbow Six thing. And you know how in Rainbow Six, the lips move of the character? The funny thing is this guy found the kid's character and zoomed in to the kid's face. And you can see the little character's mouth moving up and down as the kid's screaming at his mom.
Oh, my God.
It's really funny.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I thought that was funny.
One could only hope that this child is humiliated a little bit.
A little bit. Please. Someone send him the audio clip.
I am not a proponent necessarily of spanking your child, but I am a big proponent of shame.
My parents would have knocked me into next week. If first of all, my mom would have, but if my dad found out that I said something like that to my mom, I would be dead.
Okay.
I mean, I would be grounded. First of all, I'd get my ass kicked, literally, and then I would be grounded forever. Yeah. In fact, I'd probably just be coming out of groundation now.
Groundation. New words.
Shakespeare did it.
Hey, you know, it's just another one for the Geeks on Repertory. We have experience points, and now we have groundation.
When I was in high school, I went away to boarding school. And my roommate at the time...
Because Peter actually effed off to his mom, exactly like that.
No.
So he went to boarding school.
But my roommate told me this story where he told his mom to fuck off and called her a bitch when he was mad at her. When his dad came home... His dad came home and just decked him in the face, knocked him down. And he's like crying. He's like, "You want to talk like an adult? Act like an adult. You just told my wife to fuck off. Let's go."
You're not a kid anymore? Then let's go.
If you want to act like an adult, let's do it. Because nobody tells my wife to fuck off.
Right.
And he said, "You know what? I learned my lesson."
That's crazy. Yeah. Speaking of Xbox, I have not received my Xbox 360. Which I ordered 6 months ago.
It's okay. I hear it crashed all the time anyways.
Yeah.
I'm hearing really bad things on the performance reports.
Performance reports?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meaning
go online and see people's reviews.
Yeah.
It looks about the same as PlayStation 2 when it launched. And I mean, do you remember getting your PlayStation 2 and Fantavision was like the launch title?
Yeah.
I mean... The launch titles now aren't great, but they're way better than any launch title I've ever seen before.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You can get them to work on your Xbox 360, that's the problem.
Just because a couple people have complained.
Oh, it's more than a couple.
I think they've said about like 3% have said that, which is about normal. Remember the iPods did it? That's not what I'm worried about. What I'm worried about is, where are these Xboxes?
Yeah.
Does this now mean, like, when I went and talked to my EB Games, I said, okay, so I'm like 20th down online for the second shipment. So when's that coming in? And the guy said, well, next year. We may not get a second shipment. I'm like, you're out of your mind. You mean no one is going to get an Xbox 360 for Christmas? Nobody?
Wow.
Is this true? Is Microsoft real, or is this EB Games guy out of his mind? I don't know. It just seems impossible.
I'm hoping they're being very conservative.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm hoping too, because I can't imagine Microsoft not allowing anybody to have an Xbox for Christmas, because the initial sales was a month ago, right?
Right. And we're really, really optimistic.
Those aren't going to be Christmas presents. The people who waited in line are playing them right now. So those are not Christmas presents. So is there going to be an Xbox 360 under a Christmas tree this year? Because next year, they're going to be PlayStation 3s.
And Aaron's going to cry, so damn it, let's get one.
It's bullshit.
Drink.
Take a drink.
Oh, and by the way, before we move on to news, my sister just came back from
England.
From England, sci-fi convention there. She did some signings, and apparently there's some listeners, Geeks On listeners, were there.
We have British listeners.
We have British listeners. They came up to her and said that they listened to the show and they enjoyed her on the show and they were really cool to her. So thank you, everybody, for treating my sister very...
British geeks rock!
That's right.
Aaron, your sister's really hot.
Yeah, we get treated smoking hot.
Well, there are female geeks out there, too, who may have just treated her that way for her talent.
That's right. People sometimes just go off on people who've been on television.
Actually, we're more saying this to Aaron just to torture him.
Yeah.
Did we mention that your sister's hot?
Yeah, thank you.
Wait, if I hit on somebody by proxy because they're not here, does that mean people have to take a drink?
Did you hit on somebody?
I don't know. It was one of the things on the G.
Yeah, it's whenever he hits on a guest.
I was listening it down to my girlfriend. It was like, every time Matt hits on somebody, take a drink. My girlfriend yells from the other room.
Who did you hit on?
Maybe she should check the forum.
Peter.
Yeah, it was Peter.
We're talking about boxing. Come on, baby.
So how about some news?
I still think we should do an entire Geeks On episode in a foreign accent of some sort. Perhaps Southern. But I was going to say, since we have all these British geeks...
I'm not an actor. I can't.
I can't do that either.
And not only that, but I went through theater school. I'm done with the whole actors going through fake.
Come on, man.
Bullshit.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out.
All right. How about some news?
Let's
all
do
right,
it.
I got a news story.
Rock it out.
Online content cannot remain free, is what a group is saying. European publishers.
Which group is this?
Microsoft.
Yeah. Right. We own all online... European publishers warned Tuesday that they cannot keep allowing internet search engines such as Google Incorporated to make money from their content. The French news agency AFP is suing Google... this is an old
Google
story.
Video? This is Google Video?
Google News.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Google News.
For pulling together photos and story excerpts from thousands of news websites. Okay.
Hmm.
What's completely bogus about this... is that Google doesn't their news section doesn't display ads, so they don't make money from linking to news sites.
Right.
Mm, okay.
When they link to news sites, they don't do the whole story; they just do a small snippet so that you can choose whether or not to go there or not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is the same thing that CBS Nightly News or whatever does when they're quoting the Associated Press or Reuters.
Right. When you go to their website, you can click on their advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And on top of that, Google will remove websites from its news index if publishers don't want to be listed. And yet you've got this as an issue. I think it's completely bogus, but you know, I think people are just trying to make money off of Google.
We'll see.
This is BS.
Yeah, it's BS. All right. I'm going to follow that up with an equally relevant news story. A Russian squirrel pack killed a dog. Yeah, so, well, there's this Russian squirrel pack. Squirrels have bitten to death a stray dog, which was barking at them in a Russian park. local media report. Passersby were reportedly too late to stop the attack by the black squirrels.
Oh, I know about these things.
In the Far East, which reportedly lasted about a minute. They're said to have scampered off at the sight of humans, some carrying pieces of flesh.
Ah.
A pine cone shortage may have led the squirrels to seek other food sources, although scientists are skeptical. The attack was reported in Parkland Center of Laszlo, a village in the Maritime Territory, and was witnessed by three local people. A big, quote-unquote, stray dog was nosing about the trees and barking at squirrels, hiding in the branches, when a number of them suddenly descended and attacked.
No way.
They literally...
They can't find a pine cone, so they go after a big-ass dog?
I don't know. Quote, they literally gutted the dog.
Oh, my God.
Local journalist Anastasia Trubinskaya told Komsomolskaya Pravda newspaper. When they saw the men, they scattered in different directions, taking pieces of their kill away with them.
When squirrels attack.
Next on Fox.
Exactly. So,
Peter, this is our next movie.
Exactly. Mikhail,
Squirrel Strike.
Squirrel Strike is pretty good.
Wait a minute. Instead of, like...
Squirrel Squad.
Mindless zombies or mindless robots or something like that. Come on. Has anyone done, like, just thousands of squirrels?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know, grenades.
It could be this decade's Night of the Lepus.
I think this is actually an offshoot because too many squirrels have been playing the Conker video game.
I think you're right.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's the
The effects of video games on squirrels.
Yes.
They're making Blood Rain. I saw the poster for it.
Yeah.
So I was not excited, but I saw the poster for it.
Yeah.
A friend of mine did the fight choreography for that movie.
Oh, yeah?
What's her hoo-ha from Terminator 3.
What's your strange?
The blonde girl?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. So my favorite thing is Mikhail Tinyunov, a scientist in the region, said it was the first he had ever heard of such an attack. While squirrels without sources of protein might attack birds' nest, he said, the idea of them chewing a dog to death was absurd. If it really happened, things must be pretty bad in our forests, he added. There you go.
So the liberals are going to use this as a, you know... the environment going to hell because now all the black squirrels are killing dogs.
They're killing dogs.
I'd like to see PETA's stance on this.
Did you hear about it happened today. I don't have the news report, but there's a huge British news report about the fact that there's a possible new ice age coming to Northern Europe because temperatures are descending year to year.
Wait, let's get this straight. Is the temperature going up or is the temperature going down? Come on, people.
It's not really that easy.
They're in relation to each other, man. They're in relation.
So it's going up and going down.
I think because of the greenhouse effect, it causes an ice age to happen. You know
that. I thought that haven't we all determined that the temperature has gone up 1 degree?
Yeah. Global warming causes a greenhouse effect, which causes a global ice age. And they're saying because of this... the ice age is happening to Northern Europe, and there's this...
So where's this 1 degree?
Well,
I
don't know.
Nothing from the day after tomorrow?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, they quoted the movie saying it's actually based on pretty good science.
That is a movie that should never be quoted.
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Exactly. I got
rid
of the
news
story now.
All right.
Bring it, Don.
In celebration of last week's, or our last show's topic of violence in video games... I thought I'd bring in the report by the National Institute on Media and the Family on their 10th annual MediaWise video game report card.
Okay.
There's talking about the ESRB rating system right now.
Right.
And they say the risk to children continues to grow.
Of course.
The industry's efforts to be good corporate citizens have not kept pace with its explosive growth.
Mm-hmm.
The industry that generated $25 billion in worldwide sales last year, nearly $10 billion in the U.S. alone, seems increasingly focused on the bottom line at the expense of its customers, especially children and teenagers. Killographic and sexually explicit games are still finding their way into the hands of millions of underage players.
True.
Okay.
Okay.
True.
So they're basically talking about, in early July, we discovered that explicit pornography was included in the top-selling video game Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas. We issued a MediaWise...
Never mind. Go on.
We issued a MediaWise parent alert, and a firestorm in the news media followed. It took 2 weeks for the games manufacturer Rockstar Games to cut short its selling of its string of denials and finally come clean. And they go on to discuss about how they were forced to remove everything from the shelves.
Right.
The ESRB video game system, like its cousins in the movie and television industries, is owned and operated by the industry it is supposed to monitor. How about that? This obvious conflict of interest is why only 18 games out of 10,000 have been rated adults only. Okay. Very impressive.
Only 18.
Only 18 in the history of all video games in the United States.
Wow.
It's very impressive.
Leisure Suit Larry being one of them.
Yep. They go on to issue their response. In response to the ESRB's recent failure, the National Institute on Media and the Family will convene a summit next year on video game ratings with the leading national organizations dedicated to children's health and welfare, including Children Now, the National PTA, and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. They plan to issue and endorse a set of rating recommendations.
Okay.
They intend to. They actually intend to go on and start their own ratings board, is what the article covers.
I'll hold to that. That's fine.
And they list just a string of very interesting facts here. 87% of 8 to 17-year-old children play video games at home.
Right.
More than 9 out of 10 boys play video games at home, while 80% of girls say they play.
That's very new.
Less than half of children say their parents understand all the ESRB ratings. Only 26% say that their parent has ever stopped them from getting a video game because of its rating. 7 out of 10 children report playing mature-rated games. There are vast differences between boys and girls, with 86% of boys admitting that they play M-rated games compared to 49% of girls. I'm surprised by 49% of girls, honestly.
Well, there we go.
Almost two-thirds of children report owning their own M-rated games, up from 56% in 2003.
Wow. Okay. Well,
I guess these are mature kids.
Yep.
Yeah, that's it.
They also list a big list of games that they recommend against buying. Some of the big ones on the list that people may know of are Far Cry, Fear, True Crime, New York City, Grand Theft Auto, Liberty City Stories,
God of War.
All of these are mature-rated games, incidentally.
They are mature.
Yeah, all of them are rated M, except for one on the list, which is Urban Reign, which I'm curious to play because it's rated teen. They also have a list of 10 games they endorse, four of which are based on movies, I find very interesting.
Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is on there. Peter Jackson's King Kong, which I understand is an intensely violent video game.
Oh, so you can kill monkeys.
And apparently use monkeys to break people's backs and things like that.
And you can rip dinosaurs' jaws in half.
Yep. And another one that's two that are on there that surprised
me. Jesus horses, Aaron. They're called Jesus horses.
Two that are on the recommendation list that surprised me is one, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Okay.
I was sort of expecting them to shy away from the whole witch thing, you know. And two, Sid Meier's Pirates, in which you go out and you sink other people's ships and stab them with swords. And
yeah, but it's pretty.
You learn that ugly women are easier to seduce than pretty ones. So.
It's true.
And they're and they're crazier and I'm not even going to finish that.
There are things on their acceptable list that I find more objectionable, but that's just me.
Yeah.
So
they're crazy.
Yeah.
So they're crazy.
But easy to lose seduce.
Well, I've got an interesting story coming out of Forbes. They've picked their top 15 fictional most wealthy people in the world.
Fictional.
Are they in order?
They picked 15 of their of the most probably the wealthiest people they could think of.
Repeat that purely because they're coughing. At the
Geeks
top.
On now with extra coughing.
Yeah.
They've picked 15 of what they consider the most wealthiest people in the entire world, but they're all fictional.
They're all fictional, like within video games, or they're fictional?
No, well, Lara Croft is on the list. She's number 13. They think she's the 13th most rich person ever.
Okay.
Then Ebenezer Scrooge is 12.
I saw an ad in Citibank, and I was kind of put off by it. It shows a British guy holding doubloons or whatever the English pound, you know, during the day with the big Ebenezer Scrooge face and everything. And it says, Scrooge may not have been liked, but at least he retired early. And I was like, did you not get the point of the story? Anyway, go ahead.
Different point. Willy Wonka was 10. I really thought he would be way closer to the beginning.
Yeah.
Because Thurston Howell was... They put him at 9. Bruce Wayne, 8. Jed Clampett, 7.
Really? Now, Jed Clampett was that rich?
Now, Scrooge McDuck Yeah, they put as six.
Yeah, he's obscene. Yeah. He had a giant...
He swims in his gold.
He swims in his gold.
Okay, what do you guys think the maybe first through fourth would be?
Well, Richie Rich has got to be on there.
Richie Rich is third.
Okay.
Wow, Don, I would never have thought of Richie Rich.
I thought he would be first. That's
yeah,
the first
I thought
come.
So too. Donald Trump?
He's not imaginary, Don.
Yes, he is.
Lex Luthor
his hair
is number.
Is imaginary.
Lex Luthor, number four.
Oh, okay.
Lex Luthor is number
yep.
four.
Yep. Now you just need one and two.
One and two.
One is going to surprise you, but you're going to totally get.
I would fictional wealthy people.
Fictional wealthy people.
Two, you could totally get, but it
see,
wouldn't pop.
I have too many geek things running through.
Two, Daddy Warbucks.
Oh, come on.
Really? Number one.
I would think Richie Rich would be.
I would think so, too. But number one, the most wealthy person ever. Fictional. Santa Claus. I agree with that. Come on. He's pumping out toys every year. That many toys.
That's true.
Guys,
Santa Claus is magic. He's a jolly old elf.
He makes wealth. Well, he can create...
I figured Midas would be on there.
Yeah, why not?
Midas?
Hey, I didn't write the damn thing.
Richie Rich.
I'm not a financial wizard. I can't figure these things out. So, yeah. Anyway, that's me.
Pita?
A Marquette student has been suspended, a dental student, suspended for blog comments that he made.
Oh, I read about that.
Are you serious? I'm completely serious.
I haven't heard of this.
And he was in junior high, right?
No,
he's a Marquette student.
Marquette, college.
Oh,
college.
Well, this is a different person.
He's been suspended for the rest of the academic year in order to repeat a semester after a committee of professors, administrators, and students determined that he violated the professional conduct codes when he posted negative comments about unnamed students and professors on a blog.
Now, these were unnamed students.
But I think he did name the professors.
Okay.
Oh, but, suck my butt. But, come on.
Jeez. I'm shocked.
yeah, he described one professor a... What looks like a fuckhead of a professor. I don't know what it was specifically. They deleted the expletive, but an expletive of a professor. And he described 20 of his classmates as having the intellectual maturity of a 3-year-old.
Okay. So this is right?
These are the types of comments he was making. These are very standard, normal comments that you would make.
Yeah.
Really.
Peter says this about everyone.
Listen,
I know.
I've had jackass teachers before.
Right.
Okay. I've had asshole teachers.
Right.
That's probably what it was, an asshole of a teacher. That's probably what he was saying. So anyway, in addition to informing the student of his suspension and his need to repeat the fall semester, which costs $14,000 in tuition, Lynch threatened the student with expulsion if he continued to post material on any blog sites that contain crude, demeaning, or unprofessional remarks.
But is the blog site hosted by the school?
No.
Oh, then they don't have a leg to stand on, in my opinion.
Exactly.
Well, actually, they're a private...
Private
university.
School.
Oh, true. Private school. Okay.
And private universities have the greater ability to limit student speech than their public counterparts.
Yeah. It's a private school.
Okay.
You can't fight that.
But
well, I don't know. You know, there are some laws that that even private companies and organizations cannot trounce over. Like, you can't fire somebody because of their race.
No, come on. If you went to Harvard College, right, mm-hmm. and then went on Nightline to do an expose on the fact that you could not go to class and get an A, right, as long as you paid your full tuition, you would pass and get good grades.
Mm-hmm.
Harvard would boot your ass on the street in a heartbeat.
I don't know, but they might sue for slander.
Yeah, slander and defamation.
And you think that if they're suing you for slander and defamation, they can totally kick you out of the school.
Mm.
I don't know. It's
you know?
Weird. It's weird. I know for a fact that 2 weeks ago, a student who was in like a junior high posted on a blog of his about his teachers, and they suspended him, and they are suing the public school because the kid has his First Amendment rights. He can say whatever he wants to, and unless it's slander or...
But that's a public school?
It was a public school, so they're suing for like $250,000, and I think they're winning. So, got to watch it.
Yeah, okay. But I just think this is bullshit. I mean, this blog is intended to be... for his friends. It's not like he's...
The thing is, it is the internet and it is public exposure, so it's whether or not that can be defamation. But that's a hard call.
But that's a different thing. I mean, that's a completely different thing. And the teacher has the right to sue him. But I mean, you know,
it's a private school. They have the right to accept whoever they want, boot out whoever they want for whatever reasons they want.
Well, that's not true. If they found out, let's say they found out that two girls were lesbians and they didn't like that, you think they could kick them out?
Religious schools can. Absolutely.
I don't think they can.
I believe they can.
Well, something to follow up on.
Yeah, there we go.
That's like saying if your company can fire somebody because they're gay.
I think I just heard a news article about a student who was expelled not because she was gay but because her two mothers were.
Well, she's probably got a lawsuit on her hands and she'll win.
I don't know, but I believe they're teaching a religious.
So you think a school could fire if they found out somebody had. If they were their parents are black, could get rid of them and not have a lawsuit on their hands? And
if
not
they're firing
them
for religious reasons because black people are against God, then yeah, it's freedom of religion. They can do whatever the hell they want.
I don't think
so. The Boy Scouts have gotten away with that. Why not every other group? The Boy Scouts have successfully kicked people out of them for being gay, and that decision was held up in court.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe I'm wrong.
You are not allowed to be a Boy Scout if you're gay.
Because it's a religious organization.
Yeah.
Yep. I was in the Boy Scouts. There's all sorts of gay people.
Yeah,
there.
See? Proved you wrong.
All right. Matt.
All right.
Moving on.
A couple of short little things. One
put
is
put your pants
that,
back on.
You know. They're putting a new restoration effort of the Rankin-Bass Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Ooh! Uh-huh. Wait, that was just restored like 2 years ago. I know the guy who did it.
Well, they're
in IMAX?
1998, which was when they were making the significant changes.
Yeah.
They're restoring old scenes that were not in it.
Oh.
And this is why I'm bringing this up, because I always wondered why the hell Cornelius licked his axe.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
It was because he was tasting to see if there was gold.
No. He found, actually, of note is the fact that the original special included a scene late in the special when Yukon Cornelius discovers a peppermint mine.
Oh.
Which is the reason why he always licked his axe
from
the ground. From the
I just assumed that he could somehow taste gold.
The gold. Yeah, exactly. But I thought
so he's
that was,
mining for peppermint the entire time?
He's mining for peppermint.
Whew.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's looking
That's
for peppermint.
That's pretty cool.
But on the other side, did you hear about the guy who was shot on the air? The
airplane
today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ran out on the tarmac. You know, the guys come off the plane. They say, hey, you know, you're crazy. He says, I have a bomb in my bag. They shoot him dead.
Right.
He said that. He said he had a bomb.
Yeah. He said he had a bomb.
Wow.
Did you notice the name of the man who announced it and also, I believe, shot him?
No.
Okay. The name of the man who announced and shot him was named James Bauer. Or Jack.
Jack Bauer? Jack Bauer? There's an hour of Bauer already started without me?
Yes. So, Jack Bauer.
That kind of sounds like an episode, too.
I believe.
Shot this man.
Shot the
For those of
terrorist.
You not in the know, Jack Bauer is the lead of the TV series 24.
So, you know, I just thought that was very relevant, and nobody
wow.
mentioned the fact that Jack Bauer was already
that is
in
so an, funny.
A special agent. His specific title is special agent in charge of Federal Air Marshal Service in Miami.
Yeah, special agent Jack Bauer.
Yep.
Whew.
Wow.
So, I saw that a little bit, but I didn't know that he claimed he had a bomb.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
His
yes.
wife also claimed he was crazy, though.
Yeah.
She ran after him yelling, going, he's not right in the head, he's not right in the head.
Got bipolar disorder.
If he's screaming he's got a bomb, and then supposedly what happened was they shot him when he reached into the bag.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
If someone's screaming they got a bomb and he's reaching in the bag, shoot the guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
shoot the
it's
guy.
It's an unfortunate event that he may have been crazy,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, at that point, if he wasn't crazy... And if his wife was even trying to be
in on it,
then,
yeah.
you Good know, point. It's one of these things like you're going to lose either way. The poor guy was doomed, and so was Jack Bauer.
Yeah.
I mean, he's screwed.
I mean, clearly if he wanted to kill people and he had a bomb, he would not have left the plane like he did. But who knows what his frame of mind was. I mean, if he actually had a bomb and they didn't shoot, God, it would have been terrible.
It's not good. It's not good.
Yeah.
Well,
Don,
as a tribute to our topic of the last show we were on, when we discussed video game violence and the way it's affecting our children, apparently a group called the National Institute on Media and the Family put out a report card on the ESRB where they failed the ESRB system. and claimed that it was absolutely backwards, serving against the public interest, and working against families and parents.
Wow. Of course.
In response to this article, the ESRB actually put out a response.
Okay.
Quite interesting, actually. Let's see. They're very subtle in their response here. The ESRB rejects this year's MediaWise report card, just as we did last year, and for the same reasons. Ignoring the tremendous and verifiable success of the ESRB rating system, NIMF, meaning the National Institute for Media and the Family, instead relies on flawed research and ignores any and all conflicting evidence.
Its Do they not know that their name is NIMF?
NIMF. And the Secret of NIMF.
Well, but they have no idea what an actual NIMF is?
No, apparently not. Its statement that it will exclude ESRB from its rating summit proves that NIMF has crossed over from being a fair-minded critic to just another interest group with an agenda to advance whatever the cost. The record should reflect the fact that after last year's report card, we contacted NIMF so that we may better understand their criticism and work together, but no response was forthcoming. Their silence is an unmistakable indication that this is not about working cooperatively in the interests of video game consumers, but rather is about NIMF imposing its own narrow values and morality on the rest of the country. Regardless, it has little evidence to show its parents agree with their point of view. Our most recent nationwide survey of parents found they agree with ESRB ratings assigned an overwhelming 82% of the time, which clearly shows that our ratings strongly are representative of the opinions of and their expectations. NIMF has no comparable research, yet still purports to speak for parents. Okay, they also go on to point out a couple interesting and possibly pertinent facts, such as the NIMF relied on private for-profit company with a vested financial interest in undermining the ESRB for its attack on ESRB ratings. That group itself has rated only 99 games in its history, and even NIMF itself has reviewed only 35 games. This is hardly justification for as an authority on video games ratings, considering that the ESRB has assigned ratings to over 10,000 games since its inception.
So the NIMFOs have only looked at 35 games?
Yes. And the company that they're quoting their statistics from is basically one of the ESRB's for-profit competitors.
Is NIMF in any way affiliated with the group that you're talking about before, the psychologists and stuff, who are going to come out with an alternative to the ESRB?
NIMF is sponsoring that. NIMF is trying to become the next company that will rate video games.
So pretty much every video game will be mature or adult only, except for Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah, that's pretty much one of the things. One of the things that the NIMF report puts out is saying that only 18 of 10,000 video games have ever been rated adults only.
Right.
ESRB's response is, the call to issue more AO ratings has little to do with rating accuracy and more to do with NIMF's real agenda, which is to destroy the commercial viability of games it deems objectionable. Unlike NIMF, the ESRB's job is a neutral rater, not as a censor. Basically, one of the things that NIMF completely just skims over the fact of is that video game companies will submit for a rating from ESRB, right, and if they get an AO rating, they will go back and cut the content.
Yeah, so it's not like they're not handing out AO ratings. What's going on is when they get handed an AO rating, they go back and remove content to make sure they don't get it.
So especially in response to the fact that most vendors will not carry AO video games.
Right,
right.
You know, and one of the things they go into also is The NIMF group really harped on the fact that it was their big expose on the hot coffee issue from last year that forced all these people to pull the video game from their shelves.
Right.
Where the fact was, as soon as ESRB verified what was going on, ESRB raised the rating to AO and it got pulled off all of the shelves.
Right.
With little or no input from NIMF whatsoever.
Right.
And their name is NIMF, by the way.
At least NIMF. Yeah. Now, last year, NIMF released their top 10 horrible games, and they got like all the names wrong, and they kept the things that they said were wrong with some of the games didn't exactly exist in the games. At least this year, I saw their list. At least this year, they got the names of the games right.
Right.
And I would say that they were correct in saying that the games that were on the list are mature.
Wow.
I mean,
Yes.
They were mature games.
All the banned games that they were talking about, I actually kind of agreed with. I mean, none of these were appropriate for kids.
Right, exactly.
But the games they were extolling as being good for children, I mean, I think we touched on it at one point earlier on, especially Pirates, I don't think is appropriate for children whatsoever.
Yeah.
From what I've seen of King Kong, so not appropriate for children, and both of them are being advocated as things appropriate for children. Yeah. So
they haven't played them.
Okay.
I just real quickly, here's some rumor. IGN has said they have inside information that a Serenity sequel is on their way.
Ooh.
That it would be a Sci-Fi Channel made-for-TV movie.
Oh.
A la Mansquito.
I want to watch it.
A la Mansquito. No,
now, you know,
won't.
We have had, you know, they've had some good miniseries, so maybe they'll...
Oh, I know whatever they make will be rocking, especially if, you know, the amazing editor Lisa Lasic is associated with the project, or perhaps even the impeccable actress Christina Hendricks.
We exactly. love you, Lisa.
I don't
we
know.
Love you,
we'll see. But that's, it's all but just a rumor.
I would definitely prefer to watch it on a big screen, though.
Know that she's hot, too.
Christina Hendricks?
Yeah, very
I
hot.
Have heard that.
Yeah. I just have one other quick story. It's not really a story, but it's news. There's
Take a drink.
Audacity, the audio editor and digital recorder that is free for Mac, for Mac, for Windows, and for Linux. It has a big update, so... All of you people who use Audacity to do your podcasts, which I think a majority of the people do, and their audio editing, make sure you go download the newest version because it has all sorts of really great upgrades.
I think they're going public.
Who, Audacity?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. But anyway.
Invest.
Hey, Google just published 10 of their golden rules.
Oh.
And I just thought it would be interesting for people to hear what some of the things that they do in their company are that help them create such great product.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the things that they do is they hire by committee. So when they hire people, you have to go through a very extensive process. You have to meet a lot of people. And that means that if they actually wind up hiring you, it means mm-hmm. everybody liked you and thought you were great.
Okay.
It's kind of a good thing. It's neat. It takes longer, mm-hmm. but you know, you're going to get people that you really like if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They cater to their workers' every needs. Here are some of the perks you get. First-class dining facilities, gyms, laundry rooms, massage rooms, haircuts, car washes, dry cleaning, and commuting buses.
That's straight out of Microsoft handbook.
They say, let's face it, programmers want to program. They don't want to do their laundry, so we make it easy for them to do both.
Yeah, EA has the same type of facility. They want, yeah. You know, programmers are crazy people. They will stay there day and night if they mm-hmm. can.
Yeah.
They have these great dining facilities. Mm-hmm. They have a great gym, basketball courts. They have games that are on all the time. I mean, they try to keep you there. They have a giant arcade game room, pool tables, everything. You know, just the whole rec room mm-hmm. where you can sit around, just watch TV.
Every video game developer I've ever been to, too, tends to have a really nice working environment. Not necessarily with all those perks,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of like a geek haven, everyone I've been in. It's like there's a specific architectural design that has been consistent in every single developer's building I've been in, where there are no curves above floor level.
Right.
I mean, no angles above floor level. Everything is curved, arced, and womb-like. You know,
they want to keep you there.
Hell yeah.
They don't want you to go
comforting
home.
Game rooms, snack rooms, free soda. You know,
yeah, makes total sense.
Pack them in. They try and have lots of people in rooms so that, you know, if you need to get in touch with someone, what you do is you turn around and you yell at the person.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to, you know, call them and have them return your call hours later.
Right.
They make coordination very easy. Each Googler emails a snippet once a week of his to his work group describing what he has done in the last week. Everyone kind of knows what's happening in the company around them. Eat your own dog food. So you have to use whatever programs they're developing. So that way you kind of learn the ins and outs and how to improve
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
They encourage creativity by allowing their engineers to spend up to 20% of their time on any project of their choice.
That's really interesting. My dad used to work for Avid, and they did the same thing where they would mm-hmm. have competitions and stuff like that all the time where you could work on your own stuff, your own movies or whatever, and they'd want to see them. And they'd because you learn the program better. And you know,
I think this is a little different. I think this is, you know, you can just pick a project that you think would be great for the company. And, you know, it's got a little bit of oversight on it, but you know, for the most part, you can choose where some of your direction of your work is.
So cool. Neat.
Feeling, yeah. They strive to reach consensus. They don't try to have one person. It's not a Steve Jobsian approach,
right? Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not one person saying this is what's going to happen. This is how we're going to do it. Okay,
sounds like Pixar.
Yeah, actually.
Steve Jobs behind Pixar.
No, John Lasseter. Steve Jobs owns Pixar. Yeah. John Lasseter runs Pixar. Mm,
yeah. Okay.
Big difference. They're supposed to be entirely different people.
They actually are actually different people.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
I don't know. I've never seen them in the same place at the same time.
That's true. No, I mean that actually they cut the cord between them. They've literally been separated. Now they're two entirely different people. It's really neat.
Oh.
They co-starred in that Stuck on You movie.
They send them through the transporter during an ion storm, and it split them into two people.
I can't believe you brought up the Stuck on You movie. Yeah. All right.
One of their rules is don't be evil. I just think that's great. One of the rules is don't be evil.
I think that needs to be applied in more work environments.
Yeah, exactly. They said, in every organization, people are passionate about their views, but nobody throws chairs at Google. Unlike management practices used for some other well-known technology companies.
Ooh.
So,
Ron Stones. That sounds evil to me.
And they had a couple other ones, but I just thought that was kind of cool. It's like,
really? I auditioned for Charmed last week. And
is that still on the air?
Yeah, I didn't realize either. But there was a big sign as you walked in the door for the audition that said, if you are auditioning for evil, evil usually stands, evil takes its time. Evil uses full breaths. And that just cracked me up that there was the actors who walked in and they sat down and they just tried to be evil. Anyway, sorry. That just cracked me.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So last but not least, a woman got her face transplanted.
Oh, yeah.
I heard about this whole thing?
It's like Face Off.
Yeah,
different.
She completely had her face off by her own dog. Which everybody's been like, oh yeah, it was a dog attack, but she was like going to get some milk and the dog bit off her face.
Her own dog.
Whew, man. So I don't know what she did to piss it off.
That is called a disloyal dog.
Yeah. But replaced the nose.
Bitch, I want some milk.
Yeah. Exactly.
I said milk!
I want chocolate milk!
I want chocolate milk!
What for milk?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Bullshit, you
bullshit.
Bitch.
Bullshit. No, not bitch, you bitty.
Yeah.
I'm going to lay down the C word next.
Yeah, no. The surgeons replaced her nose, lips, and chin with the features of a brain-dead woman.
Wasn't a dead woman?
No. With the features of
They took the features of a woman that is still alive and could conceivably wake up at least... That's what the people paying to keep her on life support are hoping?
Don? I'm sure she was actually dead, but it says brain dead.
There's a difference between being in a coma and being brain dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are they keeping her alive?
Probably to get parts off of her.
Yeah.
How long do you think she's been brain dead?
Oh, that's chilling.
Don.
I don't know. You can keep a brain dead person as long as you can keep a comatose person
alive. She could have been brain dead for an hour.
Yeah.
Wasn't Terry Schiavo... Brain
Terry Schiavo.
Yeah.
Terry Schiavo.
For a while.
This person may have just died, and they kept her alive for a couple hours so they can harvest organs. I mean, that's what
That I'd find acceptable, but the first thing I had in mind was like, you know, some poor husband coming in to visit his poor brain-dead wife in the hospital.
And she doesn't have a nose. Yeah.
Her lips are missing.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. That is
this poor
so
woman
disgusting.
Coming out of her coma, looking in the mirror and deciding to go back in. You know?
Well, right. At least they left the tits.
So,
God.
That was Peter for
that
everyone.
Was Peter.
Wow. So
that's Peter at geekson.com.
Yeah. Direct to all of your comments to him.
Oh, my God. Here's the line. Here's the line, Peter. Come back. Come back, please.
I got to say.
Wow.
I very intentionally did that.
All right.
I was trying to go for a little shock value.
Wow.
Geeks On, now with more Howard Stern.
Oh, God. Yeah. Flash Gordon is going to come over here and beat the crap out of you.
Yep,
actually, Flash, I'm really sorry. I really...
All right. Anybody else have any more news, or can we get to our topic?
Let's get to our topic.
What did you want to talk about?
Actually, I got to say... I did cross a line there. But actually,
Peter, if you're good, just from experience, if you offend people, just go for it. You can't take it back afterwards. Otherwise, then you look weak and they come for you.
I call it take backs. You can't take that back. No, I saw some of the movies from Don's game the other day, and I was really impressed. And actually, I showed one to, yeah. to Matt.
We have not discussed my video game up until this point.
I know you
but I think,
can't talk about it, right?
Yeah. Well, we can
too late now.
But I can, can't I?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So I can talk about it.
You can make all the observations you want.
Okay. So the video game is...
Well, no. We don't have to talk about what the movies are from his video game. Right?
What? He doesn't know even what the video game is.
Well, what is the actual title?
The title of the video game is The Movies.
The Movies.
The Movies.
So... I was just really impressed. There's this German guy that put together this sort of like film, and you can have camera moves in this that are like great camera moves. Mm-hmm. You can do a dolly out zoom in. He did that in one shot. I was really I was like, wow. You know, he really was able to get like some sense of acting, and you know, like,
you know, Bri from the message board. I think he's working on one.
Yeah, was he actually is quite active on there.
Yeah. Well, you know, we should tell
You know him on the... you've seen
I have stuff? Actually seen his movies.
Oh, you have?
Yes, okay. I believe they're his movies. I'm going by comments he made and comments I've read on forums and in reviews.
Yeah, I think he works on that, on the software.
Interesting.
You guys are crazy. You even got ass jiggle on this thing. It's like, no, I'm serious. There's a part where he's got this close-up of this girl's booty jiggling. I'm like, what the heck?
The thing is with I'll give a quick overview of the game. I can do that.
Are you sure?
In the movies, I believe I'm okay with it now. We've let several weeks go by. Okay. I'm not going to discuss anything that I do with the game. Don't ask. I can't. But long story short, in the game, you run a movie studio from 1920 to 2005 and beyond, and you keep your stars happy. You shoot movies. You expand your lot. You research new technologies. And throughout the entire time period, everything you can make, as far as your movies goes, is evolving. Mm-hmm. So at first you're shooting kind of black and white silent films, then you discover like hand-covered colored technology, and then you move into the digital film of stuff to
So in addition to a type of Sims-style mm-hmm. gameplay, which I'm sure your company hates if I say something like that, but that type of management, you also get to create the films of the management that you are... Okay.
That is correct. And your stars change according to how you treat them. So, like, if your stars get addicted to alcohol and food, they can get very fat. And so you can have enormous people acting in your movies.
That's cool.
As they age, your stars actually get older. So by the time they get so old that they retire, you can go back and look at the retrospective of these people's careers from when they were young and vital to when they're like Katharine Hepburn later on.
So the movies say you get to save all the movies and you have this collection of films that come out of your studios.
And the best part is what Peter's talking about is the Advanced Movie Maker, where you can actually put together your own films, selecting from – I can't even begin to express how many combinations of possibilities are in there now.
That's cool.
Pretty neat. Wow.
Very cool.
That's a neat model, a game model.
I mean, that's great. I wish it came out for a Mac, but, you know.
Yeah, me too.
Shall we hit the topic?
The topic.
The topic?
The topic.
Come up, the topic.
What is the topic?
Well, the topic for this week, after a lot of mail that we got requesting this, is game mastering.
Game mastering.
How to hit those RPGs, how to do it better, how to make it faster, how to keep Don from destroying your game or Aaron. Because they're really good
and we probably won't cover everything about game mastering.
No,
we'll probably have to do another, you know, more focused game mastering topic some other time. But
this will be kind of a general overview.
We're going to do the whole topic in character as the characters from our game.
Yes, exactly.
No. Aaron is the elven archer.
Right.
Don is the dwarf warrior.
Yes, I'm actually a net runner.
A netrunner? What's that?
From Cyberpunk, dude. Oh, okay. No,
a netrunner. Like
who
Jack
plays Parker. Cyberpunk?
I do. And, what am I? You guys got to pick something.
You got to pick something from Shadowrun, your game.
No.
You can pick tinkerer.
Anything.
You're a tinkerer. All right. So quick overview of it. Basically, for those of you who don't know, and if you don't know, why are you listening to this show? A role-playing games game where basically...
Why are we even...
Yeah.
Just keep going.
We're going. Never mind. I'm not even bothering. If you don't know, forget
it's
about
like,
it.
Why like we're the listening? Entertainment tonight of, you know, like we have to explain what role-playing is to the audience.
Forget about it. All right. So the first question I really want to ask is what's the best game master you've ever game with and why?
Well, can we start with the games we started with game mastering?
Sure, sure.
Because,
yeah, no problem.
Because I think that's going to lead into some of those answers for me. I don't know about you guys. You know, I think we're all at the age here where mm-hmm. Dungeons and Dragons was an introductory game for most of us because partly it was one of the only ones that existed at the time.
I used to read the modules, but I never played it.
The same thing with me. I read the books. I thought it sounded fascinating and never played Dungeons and Dragons until late in college.
Generally. So I guess I'm about 4 or 5 years older than you guys. So maybe that's partly it. I mean, there was a... The other games started showing up quick, mm-hmm. you know, like Star Frontiers, Gamma World, Traveler, and all that.
I read all that stuff. I had all those rule books. Well, I grew up in the woods, so for one, you know, I had no one to play with.
Right. I played D&D as a kid. I remember playing it in like high school or something. You know, I don't know.
High school, my introductory game was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Really?
Yeah.
So that was high school.
That was high school. And that was really interesting because Palladium is damn confusing.
That was one of my introductions was Palladium. And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I hated it, though.
Platypus that used Capoeira.
Of course.
I played a Stegosaurus.
played like way later.
Yeah.
They had like, that was way down the pipeline. Huh.
One of the things you asked was, who is your favorite game master and why?
Yeah.
This guy's name, it's so funny, it just came to me. This guy's name is Justice Platt. That's literally his name. Justice Platt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great, great game master. He was hysterical. I just remember one
day. Did he carry a six gun?
No, he didn't carry a six gun.
So he like Justice Platt. I mean, you kind of have to, don't you?
He was an incredible character just as a human being. He was like genius, mm-hmm. genius. But anyway, I just remember one of the things that he did was when my character got in a fight with someone and then tried to use my bastard sword while I was in a hallway.
Right.
And I remember him going, okay, I think that's about a -8 to hit. Then I rolled a 1 and got the sword stuck in the ceiling.
I mean, creative, you know, that's the thing is, you know, a creative game master can take any lame, good, non-existent game system and usually make it fun. I think, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not a super big player when it comes to role-playing games.
What do you mean, in terms of the interaction between characters?
You strike me as a narrator. You don't want to say what your character does. You don't speak as your character.
No, I'm not.
You want to say what your character says.
Right, exactly.
I think
my favorite experience of role-playing, you know, I've had a lot of great, fun games, but there was a guy in college who used to play Paranoia, and it wasn't a whole... We didn't play that many games, really. Paranoia is kind of rough to actually play, I always thought.
Paranoia is a game where you die a lot, and you just keep on coming back as clones.
Yeah, that's...
But
that's a comedy game. It's a little different.
And that's the thing, is he understood that type of gameplay, and that's what made it fun. It wasn't the game system per se, even though it was fun. It's just he just understood the way it should have been. It's almost like he wrote the game, and so you know, and so he was creative because he understood how we should play. And to me, that's what you know.
Three of us are game masters. So, Aaron, what was your? We've talked about what games we started playing. Mm-hmm. What was your progression of games as far as game mastering?
Well, I started with Dungeons and Dragons, and that was when I was pretty young, and we had the typical dungeon, you know, skeleton orc load of treasure, skeleton orc, lord of treasure adventures, and we had a great time doing that. Not until though, I believe. A couple years later when Top Secret came out.
Oh, great game.
That's when I really found out that you had to, that a story was important. Like, you just couldn't lay down a whole bunch of corridors and rooms and have fun. That Top Secret didn't work that way. You had to have a bad guy. You had to have an evil plot. And you know, we always played it like a James Bond movie. It was never realistic in any way, shape, or form. So it was guy trying to blow up the world, guy trying to, you know, steal a huge amount of money, you know, satellites in outer space, space shuttle with the bomb on it. It was all that type of stuff. And And you couldn't get away with just slogging through dungeons. It wasn't a hack and slash anymore. And that's when I learned and started to create also, which I love doing now, which is bits and play aids.
Right.
I love, you know, maps, and I love, you know, having character. In fact, I even did a game, a mystery game, which was a sci-fi mystery game, and I had clues with satellite photos, and you had to actually look at the satellite photo to get the clues. Otherwise, you just weren't going to solve it. Right. I mean, and I learned that from Top Secret. So then I got into GURPS and stuff, and again, GURPS, I think.
GURPS is sort of where you settled.
GURPS is where I settled because it was a game where I think it appealed to me where it was, and there are no game worlds in GURPS.
Right.
Well, there are, but you can avoid them.
That's why I really sort of enjoyed Rifts, was because Rifts was my first one where I basically started off as a game master where I had done a couple of small adventures, like one shots. But then in college, I had these four guys who were like, oh, you play? Yeah, let's try it. And I had no idea how to do the adventure, so I came up with this idea to – I gave them a sheet which had all of these – how much can you bench press? You know, take these 10 questions from the Mensa exam.
Right.
You know, and I quantified all of their physical
– So you made that.
I made them into characters. And then literally for the first couple of adventures, they were students at NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And weird things kept on happening. And then eventually they ended up in the world of Rifts and getting rifted forward into time. And then we played for a year and a half in a continuous game that was twice a week. And they, I mean, it was an amazing game. And they really taught me how to play because they were like, wow, what's happening to my character today? Because it's them. It was really interesting. So they were always in character.
I have to interject one, just as a side note, something I did once that was so much fun. I was playing with six people who were in their 20s and had been friends since they were children, right? And so I had them all make themselves up as characters when they were in their early teens, late tweens, I guess, whatever you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
They made themselves up as truthfully as they could, and then I told them all to pass the character to the left and play that person as they remember them.
That sounds like fighting.
Oh, that's them's fighting words right there.
It went really well.
That sounds like a funny, fun
game.
Yeah, that's not something you could do with most groups.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
But that's a good – I mean, that was a – see, again, the creativity of a game master, to me, is an important part of – because players will supply.
Well, it's true. But the game master, I think most game masters need to find the genre they're good with.
I agree.
Like, for me, I actually wandered around a little bit before I found the genre that's right for me. I started with Marvel superheroes in college. That's where I started. And they were very, it started off very bright, light, kind of.
Golden age
stuff. But my own personality and storytelling style started to assert itself, and the game became very Dark Horse over the next couple of years. Everything took a more twisted turn, and then eventually I moved into the vampire game. And
you just said, hell with it.
I'll just buy the game. Well, I mean, there was some transition points there, but that's where I ended up in the storytelling
Without the vampire role-playing game, Don and I don't know each other.
That's true, actually. Well, that's how we met.
Because the kid who I gamed with for a year and a half got into a LARP. I forgive him and Don for getting into a LARP. And ended up playing this, I guess, amazing LARP in New York City, which everyone raved about.
Yeah.
Pardon the pun. But he came out here to Los Angeles. He's like, oh, you got to meet my friend Don. He's so cool. And then I ended up hanging out with Don more than I ended up hanging out with Hugh. Which
was, we miss you,
very
Hugh.
Strange.
He's in Boston now.
Yeah, he's in Boston now being a professor.
But, that's our background.
So then
right now,
what are your best so now you guys have probably found your games and your genres.
Yeah.
What have been your best campaigns in those genres, or just best campaigns?
Mine was that year and a half campaign straight out, because it was one continuous thing. And every time a new module came out, like, the guys started to know. They were like, a new module came out today. And I was like, yeah, I know. Do you get it? We'll buy it for you. Yeah.
So you're able to work in modules.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I cannot do that.
I have never touched a module as far as
I can't. I can barely. Really? Well, Rifts is totally insane because
we'll have to talk about this.
Their world books are like 200 pages. Mm-hmm. So The three you've got to read them and then retain the information because you have to be on your toes. You can't be flipping through books.
See, the three of us have very different gaming styles, though. Mm-hmm. Like, my observation is that you are very about preparation, right?
I want to make up the world from scratch.
Yeah. Yep. You want to, well, you also want a script of how things will kind of play out.
Kinda, yes. Yeah. I run games like television shows, television series.
Right.
I really want a script.
Yeah, and Matt's just like, you know, A plus B equals C. Yeah. You will get to C.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I want a script. I want people to, you know, go through the script, which is why both you and Don.
Yeah, if somebody puts a script in front of
games. I'm kind of like, I'm not like Don. I'm kind of like you, except for I do, and I do work this to all video games, or video games, into role-playing games. I don't know if you guys remember that I would do a lot of one die rolls to make random, not decisions, but random things happen. If you said, hey, you know, I look around, are there any boxes around here? I would, instead of just, you know, thinking ahead, like, ooh, maybe, is this going to ruin my, I would roll the dice to see if there would be, you know, a box there.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is to kind of make me work something out on the spot and then see where that leads to. Like, I like the fact that, you know, I might, you know, the die roll may make me change my plot a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I know a character, the players are going to do it.
I've now become like Rocky because... When after I played with you, Aaron, and after I played with you, Don, I had to go back to training school because, I mean, I got so angry in those games, I would be shouting, going, "Why don't we just continue the game?" Because yeah, it was literally
should we discuss the Mesa?
Wait, what's your best campaign, Don?
My best campaign was a vampire campaign I ran for 3 years.
Yeah. 3 years.
3 years. Yeah.
Damn.
With the same group of people, I actually had people driving in from Boston to Amherst because they didn't want to give up my game.
Wow. You know,
I was very flattered.
Yeah, Don runs these really, really thinky games where it's like, you got to be playing.
Right.
I mean,
it's true.
You got to be
my
in
games,
character.
If you don't bring it to the table, nothing's going to happen to you. If you want to be an audience member, you can be an audience member. But if you want to participate, you will participate.
I think mine, I had a couple, I ran a... I started out, this was in college, I started out as it being a regular cyberpunk adventure. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is in the 80s, so...
Mike Pondsmith cyberpunk? Ralph Telsorian games?
No, this was a GURPS game, but it was just in the cyberpunk universe.
Okay.
GURPS had come out with their cyberpunk world book. This is the one that got stolen by the Secret Service for a while because the government thought that it was...
That cracks me up.
Yeah.
Wait. Government thought what?
The government thought that Steve Jackson Games was making a handbook for hackers to infiltrate the internet. So the entire game, Cyberpunk for GURPS, was taken.
They came in, they stole the computers, they did everything, and they never gave it back.
They claimed they took the whole thing.
Wow.
So I think he stumbled on something, and the Men in Black had to take it away.
Well, he interviewed hackers. He got the information. Yeah. I mean, that's the great thing about whether you like it or not. That's one of the good things about GURPS is that, you know, if they do a world book on hacking, they go to hackers. If they do a world book on space, they go to NASA and they get, you know, guys. So that tipped them off. So I had this, you know, but what I did is it was a disguise for I actually ran and I started you guys in it, but didn't work too well. But it was an alien from the movie Aliens.
Right.
I wanted to jam them into a continuing story of the alien. So the players thought they were in a typical, you know, undefined cyberpunk, and about two or three stories into it, when like facehuggers came out, they were all like, "Oh shit!" You know, this isn't the typical, you know, net running thing. They had actually aliens.
That's fun.
Okay, so as far as our styles go, we have Peter, who has played before and ran when he was younger. We have Matt, who's highly scripted. Aaron, who's medium scripted. Mm-hmm. And I am usually very free form.
Yeah.
I don't believe in preparation aside from knowing the story.
Interesting.
For my belief...
Don has his characters. Like, they're like lead weights. Mm-hmm. He knows where his characters are. And then they're what hold the whole story together.
I see.
You know.
But... The key for me, and this is my advice to people, right? For my style of gaming, if you're a freeform game master, know your characters as far as the NPCs go. right? Mm-hmm. Know their motivations and know what they want to achieve.
Right.
Those goals need to be tied into the characters' storylines in some way. They need to want the characters to do something.
Right.
Or the characters need those characters to do something.
You know? And now here's the thing about doing it freeform is that those motivations and stuff need to be rock solid.
Yes.
Because you can see through, you know, players will be able to see through, like, well, why would he do that?
In a heartbeat.
And a lot of times with the scripted stuff, actually this happens with this happens with scripts too, mm-hmm. is you can mask some of that with action and pushing people around, and it looks like they have better reasons because you can hide it with just pre-potted action, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless you play with Don.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't think about those things. I'm just saying you have to be even more, I think you have to be especially aware, mm-hmm. because you have to come up with the actions of the bad guys.
So do
on
you
the
believe
fly.
That the
Oh, absolutely.
So do you believe that the player character should flesh out their own characters, or that you should provide them with back history?
I believe that they should come up with a basic idea. Mm-hmm. of the background, and then you throw things at them during the game, and the way they react to it is what fleshes out their characters in the present, and then that the existence of the present creeps into the past. Does that make
I
sense?
I also like to, you know, I think the first game is mm-hmm. of your campaign, if you are going to do a campaign, is your most important game, because this is where you're setting the tone and the pacing of how your game's going to be like. But also, you're giving a brief mini history of your world. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just go read the comic book, or you're making it up from scratch. And so you instantly, all your players are going to have what their character is in their brain yeah. based off of what you've told them.
I actually disagree with you. But it's, again, you have scripted games. So you right. tend to think more episodically.
Right.
Because I'm thinking more kind of linearly with my beliefs, mm-hmm. is that the second game is going to be the game where the fun really starts happening. The first one is the gathering, where people just start meeting each other and just start scratching the surface of who the other people are.
Mm-hmm. And well, I agree that can be it.
Yeah.
But I think that is that whole first game establishes
the first bang.
Like if I you know mm-hmm. if I'm going to meet Matt for the first time, my character, and I don't know who I am, it's hard to meet him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, the way I ran the year and a half long campaign in Rifts was they were all students, and I played them as students who didn't know each other within mm-hmm. NYU. And then the first time that they met each other. They had all been rifted into the same place, but they didn't realize they were in the same place. And so I had this whole section where everybody handed me notes of mm-hmm. what they were doing in the dark, because nobody could see what was happening. And then I'd explain what everyone heard and what they felt and what was going on.
Did that go well?
Oh, yeah.
I'm into pacing in my games. And
You're very good at that.
And mm-hmm. the you know game mastering squirreling away for any particular mm-hmm. amount of time. I don't know if that's what happened,
yeah.
but that sometimes I think we've been.
It played off incredibly. Actually, it played really, really well. Because
we played a game, I don't know, where somebody squirreled off for like a half hour. It was probably
my game.
What do you mean squirreled off?
Like, in other words, the game master took somebody else away for a half hour, and because the character
that happened
left,
a couple times.
Yeah,
in
it was probably
games.
My game.
And actually, I've heard of role-playing game or groups that do very well with that, because this is where I break down as a player, because players start role-playing together and they give the game master a break.
Those are the people that I work best with.
I'm not your player then. I have a harder time mm-hmm. with that. Like when Morgan played, who's obviously played with you before.
A lot.
I played with her with Matt's game and mm-hmm. I think a couple other people.
And Morgan was in character.
Right. Yeah. And it took me off guard at first. You know, we roll the dice to see if everybody has, you know, if you could, you know, saw, you know, make a perception roll. We'd all make it but her, and she'd turn to me and say, is there anybody around here? I said, yeah. I'd say, yeah, but I failed my perception roll, or I made my perception roll. And she goes, and she looked at me with her eyes open like,
what do you
idiot,
mean?
I'm role-playing my character. And I was like,
She would cross her fingers and look at me, and when she crossed her fingers, it meant it would be, out of character.
Yeah.
And like very like time well, out. I just want to and I was
one
like
one thing
wow.
I really remember was Morgan and I were playing characters that were very much at odds against each other in your game.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into it. Our characters got into a big old knockdown drag out argument in mm-hmm. your game. And both you and Mindy sat there on the other side of the room staring at us in absolute horror, thinking that Morgan and my relationship had just broken down in front of you.
Yes.
And we were at each other's throats.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, that it did take me off guard at first, because I am definitely one of those role players who explain what my character does and narrates what my mm-hmm. character does. Yep. It's almost like a third person view of my character.
All right, so.
So rather than talking about ourselves and experiential stuff at this point, because we've done that a lot at this point.
Let's go into a couple of tips and secrets, shall we?
Well, actually, I have a question.
Yeah.
Because I've been kind of watching from the side here a little bit.
Peter's been playing the game, not...
But
he's already rolled up a character.
Yeah.
I've just noticed that, like, in certain types of games that I play that are video games,
mm-hmm.
I have certain types of strategies that I use.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm playing Civilization, I'm a guy that focuses on building and, you know, getting the most I can out of every city and, you know, research and, you know, that's the type of character I am. I will mm-hmm. never take the guy that's good at fighting. That's not the type of guy I want to play.
I do the same thing.
Okay. And I noticed that when I play a game like, I wouldn't say Warcraft, but maybe like Warcraft or something like that. But those games that you can play where they're strategy games, you can fight people. You know, I'm not a big attacker.
You play a strategy almost every single time.
Well, they play strategy too. They just play an offensive strategy. I play
a builder strategy.
I play a builder strategy than a destroy strategy.
Right. But I'm saying you tend in video games to find out what is the key to beating the game.
Yeah, I mean, I would say
no.
That.
What he's saying is that when he plays Civilization, he's trying to hit outer space rather than conquer the world.
Right.
Right. Now, my brother, on the other hand, is very aggressive. You know, he fights, he strikes early, he attacks. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was noticing that I was wondering if that relates to how you play role-playing games.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. In terms of the munchkins?
I would say your style of playing, mm-hmm. what you want from a game, mm-hmm. is probably better served by a tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah, big time.
Because
big time.
Whether we're talking heavily scripting or freeform, well, this is one of the things we're going to get into with advice, is the first key to success for any game master, in my book, mm-hmm. is remember the game is about your players.
Mm-hmm.
If the player is making a scientist whose goal is to discover a cure for cancer, then a good game master is going to have to figure out a way to incorporate that character that's been created into the story in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And not come up with a game where, you know, aliens have invaded, all science has been rendered completely non-operational, and here's a gun, go fight them off.
Yeah, right. Or and that, my game, you know, where you can't dial the radio.
And that can be solved in a couple of ways. Mm-hmm. I don't... There's been a couple of games where I've... And one of them was with you guys where I said, make whatever you want to.
Yeah.
Mainly because it was supposed to be a one-shot game.
I was the biggest munchkin in the world.
Yeah,
biggest munchkin ever.
We should explain to people what a munchkin is if they don't know this.
Oh. A munchkin is someone who's going to manipulate the game system in order to achieve maximum effect in one area with a character.
Yes. Right.
For example, Matt decides he wants to make a character for the GURPS game.
Who
and
is
he
a
looks
combat.
At Matt and says, it looks at Aaron and says, I want to make a character that can kill anything, is completely invulnerable to harm.
Yeah, effectively.
Right. And we made that character using the point system, though.
Yes.
Which I find very funny, actually, because it turned out his big vulnerability was magic, and he was so vulnerable that an enchanted hat pin could take him out. You know? Cracked me
up. An enchanted hat pin killed him?
No. No, but...
Yes.
Almost killed him.
Yeah.
There were some limitations. But getting back to the point was that I don't believe... I have a hard time as a game master saying, listen... make whatever you want to, mm-hmm. and I'll fit it into this world. Because I think it's partly up to the game master to say, hey, here's the type of game we're going to be playing.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to make this a fun game and to fit into the storyline of a campaign,
mm-hmm.
here's some guidelines. So, you know, don't make the, you know, if it is going to be a game about combat marines fighting aliens.
Don't name make the school, your evil guys the muffs. Yeah,
don't make the school teacher.
Don't make the school teacher. Right. Exactly.
The school marm who just wants to be loved.
Because, you know, it just doesn't fit in. It's like a good movie. You know, you just don't want to write a character that doesn't fit.
I take a slightly different approach where I ask for player cooperation in a different way,
mm-hmm.
where I basically say you can make whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
but there's an understanding in my groups that the story will follow the majority. And if your character decides this is, you know, or is rejected by the group or rejects the group, that character will leave, go off on his own, and you will have to
figure
a new character.
That was why I had such a problem with you and Morgan, was because you guys wanted to do your own storylines, and that was something that I had never been approached with before. And I was like, why do you want to go there? I didn't make that interesting at all.
Yeah.
It's a big, nice forest here.
You know what? That's the problem with the game master. You know, that's the part with game mastering, is that you need to make the players feel motivated to either stick with your plan, if that's what you have, or you need to be able to follow the players and have them write it for you, if that's what you're
saying.
That's
what I say. Okay. I say the characters will decide the story. They will tell you what is interesting to them, and you must custom your story to that.
I just realized I've been playing a role-playing game for about the last 2 years, and I didn't know it.
Yeah, it's called marriage.
Yeah. Right. No. One of the jobs that I had, my last job, was that I every once in a while would pick up my boss's son and drive him to and from school.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we would do is we would tell stories. We would make up stories on the way. Okay. And they were called the Merlin babysitting stories, about a little kid that winds up having Merlin as his babysitter.
Right.
And he's in this giant house full of magical objects and gets in trouble. Some, you know.
So, that was a sitcom in the 80s, by the way.
Well, there you go. So anyway, I just realized that it was – the kid would – you know, something would be going on. I'd be telling the story. Go, no, I don't want that to happen. I want this to happen. And I'd have to just turn around the story and take it another way. I just realized.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, there are role-playing – now, there are new role-playing games out that I have not tried. And I believe, from what I've been hearing, that role-playing games have changed a lot from the kind of technical role-playing games that I've been used to.
And they're heading more and more towards story.
Well, let me throw this out here as the second rule of good storytelling before you go on that. If you are playing in a complicated game system,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Rifts or Palladium, complicated. If you're playing in a simple storytelling system, like Storyteller system,
mm-hmm.
unless you get
know
combat.
Your rules to mm-hmm. the point where you feel confident in them, and you will not need to pick up that book.
Ever.
Nothing right. will kill a game faster than having to look up a rule or argue with a player about a rule.
Okay. We all saw a movie recently.
The Gamers.
Called The Gamers.
Right.
Which I
still haven't seen that.
Oh, you weren't there. That's right.
I was next.
There's another movie that's out called The Gamers that I talked to the producer, which I'm going to have conversations with, so I'll bring that up later. But this one was an interesting film because it kind of brought up the issue of the game master and the player's relationship, and I thought it was a pretty funny little bit.
For those of you keeping track, Peter has just been interrupted. Please drink. Go on, Peter.
When the movie started, I was like, oh boy, because the production value looked awful.
Yeah, it was guys in a college shooting on video.
Looked terrible, but it was really funny.
Yeah,
it had a lot of witty stuff. Like, there's this part where, you know, a thief is going to backstab someone, and he chooses his ballista, you know, the giant crossbow to backstab him with. It's like
wheels it up with a crossbow. He's like, how do you have a ballista? He goes, it's on my character sheet.
You know, yeah, exactly. You know, it's like,
I don't think I have ever laughed as hard as some of the jokes that have come out of role playing.
Oh, God.
I've just laughed till snot was coming out of my nose.
That's one of my main reasons for role playing. I love the late night laughing. I've always been kind of curious if a role-playing game would be fun to watch. Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea. Yeah. I remember playing a game with a guy who's playing a thief, literally same similar situation, and he's sneaking into a cave full of orcs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm going to sneak, and hopefully they won't see me. So he's sneaking between stalagmites, and he sneaks and he sneaks, and the game master says, suddenly, out of nowhere, three crossbow bolts impale you. And he's like, okay, I keep on sneaking. And I was just like,
they saw you, dude. You know, it's like,
I could only imagine this little guy just sneaking. Okay, keep on creeping.
You got to see the gamers, Matt. There's a joke in there that you that would just kill you.
Okay.
Sorry. All right. So we've covered
basically long-term campaigns, how to create style and atmosphere, fleshing out the characters, how to work in the fringe characters.
I don't think we've covered style and atmosphere.
Well, how do you maintain a style and atmosphere, or how do you bring it up? I mean,
do you guys use any props, music, lighting, or anything for your
music? Yes,
I bring live music. Trolls to the game. You know, I find that when people want to have a fight, if you just throw them,
they
into
don't bring
a room,
your girlfriends in on this.
Throw them into a room with the troll, you know, and you know they get the game really quickly.
Yeah.
Who uses music?
I use music.
I
all
Matt,
time.
You do.
Too. Oh,
you
all do. The time.
My music is bad, though. I need better music.
When I was at when I was at Gen Con SoCal, there was an entire booth with people who were selling different types of music for different types of role playing.
Oh my god!
I could have used that
when I went to Wizards of the Coast before it became taken over by Hasborg.
Yeah.
In Seattle,
your game will be assimilated.
They had this downstairs section that was devoted to different types of game mastering, and mm-hmm. it was incredible.
That sounds great.
There were two. There was one that was basically an L-shaped couch with mm-hmm. sort of a lounge-shaped divan in front of it, and the ceiling was arched so that the guy who sat on the divan, the game master, mm-hmm. could basically speak as softly as he wanted to, and the people on the couch would still hear him no matter what.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. But then one next door was the technical masterpiece of gaming. The game master sat in the center of a horseshoe, and the gamers could sit up to 8 players around the outside of the horseshoe. Mm-hmm. Each player had their own screen. The game master had a computer which he could send any message very quickly, typing, mm-hmm. to any one of his players. Each gamer also had their own speakers directly in front of them, so he could play each individual music.
That sounds
for them
pretty
as well.
Cool. There's one piece of advice I'd like to offer people who use music, and this is
keep it low.
Well, this actually ties into I'm going to call it hint number 3. Okay, tip number 3. Always remember that your game needs to focus on your players' characters. No matter how interesting you find your NPC. Remember that your NPC is not to be the hero of the story.
My NPC, Whipshanks, became the hero of the story. You guys would not let him go.
No, your
impersonation accent became the hero of the story.
Okay, wait.
It's my generic British accent.
Oh, yeah.
It pops up all the time.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Governor. His character named Whipshanks, and he's great.
Okay, very much.
But what was so funny is every third character you came across was Whipshanks in drag, was Whipshanks in a smock, was Whipshanks in a strange hat. That accent was pretty ubiquitous.
Oh, wait a minute. I think that you could highlight a non-player character and make it important.
You can. You can, but remember, these highlighted NPC characters mm-hmm. are to add flavor to the campaign, mm-hmm. not to become the campaign.
Right.
Nothing kills a campaign faster than having the same NPC rush in to save the heroes every single time.
Oh, no, you're right.
And I've worked with two different game masters in the past who use recurring theme songs for these favored NPCs.
Well, first of all, why are NPCs coming in and saving anybody? Hello,
that's
are we playing this
very
game?
Popular thing that a lot of DMs do mm-hmm. is like, you know, all of my player characters are third level, so clearly I need to have an eighth level NPC there to protect them. That'll kill your game.
Here's the thing, Mike. When people play my games, they don't get past third level. I don't like super high level characters. Mm-hmm. Even in Dungeons and Dragons, from the very beginning, I mean, we never got to level 50 and level 60. You know, these books kept coming out about, you know, magic at level 70, magic at level 80, and I'm like, we never got past level 8 because the monsters are cooler. At, you know, skeletons are still cool. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Skeletons with armor and stuff are cool. And, you know, trying to jam in bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger monsters just to compensate. Hey, guess what, people? It doesn't matter what level your character is.
Yeah.
The game master is going to match you.
There are different schools of thought on that.
Yeah. Because, you're right.
You know,
this is
so
a
that brings up the next section, GM control and power players.
I definitely believe this is a me thing only, is I love watching, I love the struggle of characters, and I love the growth. I love starting characters at the beginning of a campaign as,
measly, you know, little peons and have
stop
them
poking me
and have them being the heroes of the, you know, the entire nation at the end.
Yeah.
And unlike the game that we played, again, mainly because it was supposed to be a one-shot deal where we had essentially it was a superhero fantasy game. I like starting characters, you know, almost below first level and have them just, you know, take a, you know, sword and have to, like, you know, knock their way through a horde of skeletons who are normally easy to get through in most games.
I believe, for me, the thing that gets me excited is you can start at a higher level than first, for example.
Yeah.
But I believe the lower you start, the higher potential that character deserves to have.
Yeah, me too.
You know, you start at eighth level, you know, fine, you're at eighth level. That's kind of your character. You're there, right? You start at first level, there's a greater range for growth, you know? And I'm not just talking power stuff, and neither are you. I understand that. You're talking like, you know, your character's going to discover the world. Your character's going to discover themselves and their own capabilities.
And also, to me, it also helps with a game system, because you also get to learn the game system. Most beginning characters only have a couple things on your character sheet to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
When you start getting to the
50-foot of rope is always there.
Yeah. Your iron rations, your 50-foot of rope. Maybe you can do, you know, detect traps and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, you know, the special ability is. Then you can, then you don't have to look at the book as much. That was the problem with our GURPS game, is that we played 500-point characters.
Which
and
were
so you're
really complex,
Yeah, so they were so complex characters, it was like grinding. You know, GURPS is a four-trait character system.
Right.
If you start with a beginning-level character, you only have two abilities. And if once you learn, if you look it up once, you know what you can do.
For me, I prefer to see characters start at the lowest possible level, same as you. But I like to see them progress through the first few levels very quickly. I like that early part to be a prologue,
right,
so that they feel like they've gotten their character to a point where they have some flexibility and they don't have to be worry about being put down by a hat pin, you know?
Right. Interesting. Well, I always thought, you know, again, and I do this all the time, as a game master, I bend the rules all the time because I think that's what should be done. I love sending beginning characters against a dragon.
So how do you feel about the reward system of how do you feel about the reward system of leveling and like that? Do you think it's something that helps or hinders a game?
I dislike leveling in that, you know, your character is the same, better.
Yeah.
The same, better.
I think that's kind of phased out of most games now.
It is. I mean, D20 is once again competing with GURPS.
Yep.
I think GURPS is better as far as leveling up goes, from what I've seen.
What is the system of GURPS? Is it every time you use it or something?
With GURPS,
like that?
You use experience to raise skills, right?
To raise anything,
you know.
Okay, so it's Shadowrun.
But
so it's the same idea. Whereas with a leveling system, you gain experience, and then once you cross a certain threshold, you get all this stuff.
Right. GURPS is, because it's point based, like a lot of games now, system and all that. You can buy things at very small points if you want to. So the instant you get 1 point, you can raise your archery 1 point.
I learned to type.
Or guess what? I'm going to learn a new skill, but I'm going to suck at it. You know, I'm going to learn to type at -5, and next game I can raise it to -4.
I find it lets you flavor your characters more. Like, I'm more likely to use, in that sort of kind of gradual increase system, I'm more likely to have a character learn, you know, he wants to learn, you know, to play a pipe. You know, just that's what some soldiers do. You know, you're bored, you hang around. Whereas with a leveling system, I've got 3 points and I'm not going to see any more points for another 17 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, this is going into bluff.
Exactly. You know? I agree entirely.
It makes a lot of sense. I'd rather have the slow incremental changes than, you know.
That's D&D
interesting
still
because
does that?
Yeah, it does.
Really?
It's unfortunate.
World of Warcraft started off in the alpha as an incremental change game. When you leveled, you had a bunch of points to spread around the way you liked it.
Around?
I'm Elmer Fudd today.
Kind of does that. You just level.
Now everything goes boom, and you get all these different skills that you can then buy per level, and they have
have the talent tree, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
But I don't think the talent tree is really flexible enough.
You could change stamina. You could change strength.
Yeah, that doesn't do it for me. I think what I've heard about the upcoming Dungeons & Dragons system, the world MMORPG, sounds much more flexible.
Interesting.
Huh.
But, I mean, that aside, we're talking about game mastering, not so much leveling up your own characters.
No, but I think that affects, I think a game master controls that. Like,
yeah.
I, you know, as a GURPS role, mastering mm-hmm. person, you don't get points for killing monsters, you don't get points for this, you don't get points for that. A game master assigns points at the end of the session if he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
He can assign them whenever. And he can say, listen, you guys did great, I'm going to give you all 3 points, because usually it's very small. And I believe that a game master should point out players who did a particularly good job of role playing their character, including all if they you know I
oh,
love
agreed.
I love characters who have a lot of disabilities, and the player embraces that and uses that and plays, sometimes makes his character do something that's horrible and against, maybe even hurts the character. Yeah. I'll give him gobs of points.
In my game, what I used to do was I would give a GM's award,
mm-hmm.
right, for superior role-playing for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then I gave a player-based award where everyone would vote for who they believe was the strongest role-player that night.
Huh, that's
and
cool.
that person got an award, too.
See, now that's a brilliant tactic.
That's interesting.
That works very nicely. People to really, you know, invest.
Oh, I give strong incentives for role-playing.
A lot of times it doesn't even necessarily encourage them, per se. But one of the things it does do is it says to the group, hey, you know what? We're all watching. Mm-hmm. We all want you. If you've picked Megalomania, would you please act that way?
Yes.
You know, you got the points for it, and, you know, you can, you know, take a bullet better mm-hmm. than somebody else. But come on, you picked Megalomania not to munchkin your character, because that was your character. You know,
right.
Let's see Megalomania.
Right.
And, you know.
And I think game masters need to give incentives and opportunities for people to act out those things.
Sex experience points, that also in that?
Sex experience points, always.
To,
welcome
you know.
To my game.
Sex
wants a level 6 character? Let's talk.
Hey, why does he have a level 15 character and I have a level 1 character?
Well, let's go to the other room and we'll
and
talk
the game,
about it.
Yeah, and the Game Master Award goes to an extra 20 points.
Not again!
Right.
Sorry.
Just that we should start wrap now, just because it's
just
time.
Wrap.
Yeah,
we got more
stuff. But I was thinking with Quick Hand, how do you run a game as full out as you want to on no time? Because we are adults now. We have
Here's
no
the thing.
Time.
I haven't played a role-playing game in a long time.
Damn straight.
Mainly because of the preparation. And this is one of the things that I've been racking my brain on for about a year. I've even mm-hmm. kind of asked you about it, is I'm trying to develop a game system. Not a role-playing game system, but a game system to play with any role-playing game where you don't have to prepare beforehand, that it's some way of a group of people sitting down with the characters and dealing cards to yeah. kind of make a story with a game system. And I'm almost there, but I haven't locked down
there is
yet.
A game out called Once Upon a Time, which is similar to that.
I saw that at Comic-Con. I mean, at Game or
Gen Con.
It's quite an old game. I have a copy.
Yeah.
Where basically,
I'm kind of thinking down those lines, but a little more specific. But
well, this—I don't think it's really a role-playing game, but it's an interactive storytelling game where all of you are dealt cards, and the object of the game is to get the cards out of your hand. And the way you do that is by telling a story where you use the elements on the card.
And
as soon as somebody else mentions something that you have a card that even vaguely applies to, you get to steal the story from them and then start telling the story from your perspective.
And each card has a picture on it with all sorts of, it's like a tarot card in a way, but it's got different things. And so you use the visuals of the card
to further the story.
Yeah. Like and it's amazing the stories you can get out of it. We told Melrose Place the fantasy murder story.
I'm kind of thinking about this idea, but a little more specific. And
well, for me, it's more about, like, for my storytelling style,
mm-hmm.
I'm always ready to go. All you need to do is make up characters and we're good to go.
Huh.
You know?
I'm definitely not like that. I have to have prep time.
I got a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've been playing for 8 weeks.
Yes.
That's and, beautiful universe you live in.
Theoretical. You've been playing for 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your characters are, they're cooking along. You've got an investment in the character, and the character dies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how do you guys play? Is the character dead?
Yes.
Permanently dead?
Yes.
Okay, here's the thing about that. If the character dies, it's because the game master killed the character, pretty much. It's virtually unless the game master is completely out of control of his game and players are just killing each other for whatever reason, then if that's the style of your game, then I guess it really depends on the gaming group. Usually that means that you've all kind of agreed in your head that the character is going to be dead.
With my style of storytelling, one of the things I like to try and make happen, if a character with a sustained history dies, if the death itself can't be a dramatic moment, can't have meaning, then the repercussions for that character's death will cause drama.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, if I can't offer you a heroic death for your character, I can offer you a requiem. That's the best I can do. You know, where the character is remembered or key things become more difficult because that character wasn't there. And that character is, their absence means something. That's the that I can offer you. But I'm not going to bring your character back to life.
Now,
but I like my character.
Well, see, then the game
but
master.
No,
see, here's the thing.
No, wait. This has been 8 weeks of my life. Okay,
I had this situation happen.
You're telling me I wasted 8 weeks of my life on this stupid character?
Okay, I'm sorry.
I just quickly had this happen. I had this happen in college to the game that I was explaining. That was a year long. The alien cyberpunk thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We invited because of a friend. Somebody into the gaming group temporarily for one night because he wanted to role play with us. And this guy was a complete a-hole and a rogue. He hadn't role played much at all, but he thought it was so much fun. Huh. But to him, it was how much destruction he could cause to the other characters and to the game, really. And we had this situation where one of the characters says, I'm going to run down the hall and save, you know, the cat. And everyone else says, we're getting on the elevator and getting off the planet. And he goes, I'm going to go, you know, you go without me. And the other character says, I go and shoot him. And I go, well, why would you shoot him? He goes, because he's not getting on the elevator. And I said, well, who cares? He goes, I just want to shoot him.
Yeah.
And even though I had lost control of the game, it was completely my fault. And the other player who invited him, I was already angry that we invited his friend. I let the character die. And the player was pissed because we've been playing about a year now.
Yeah.
And his character was dead. And I said, he's dead. Do not worry about it. Now, this is probably I shouldn't have done this. It's kind of a little bit cheesy. But we played the rest of that night. The character was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had the next time I had that player play a non-player character. And then the game after that, I had all the players... Of course, the other guy was gone, the rogue guy. I said, okay, they all started in these vats. And, not vats, but these sleeper units. And they were way on another planet they had visited like 6 months beforehand. And they had found out that they had been playing clones for 6 months. And the original characters were way in the back. Now, this was obviously a big cheat. Right. But I kept those characters alive, and I had them doing things that screwed up the characters who then had to start over. And so even though the story kept going forward, their characters were set back.
That's an interesting take.
It was the only way I could make everybody happy and make the story interesting. And it actually made it very complex because the other characters were still out there doing shit, and they were still kind of... Anyway, it is a problem.
It is a problem, but it's an important problem for a good game. For example, my vampire game. We ran 3 years, right? And people really got into their characters. And one of the reasons why they got into those characters is because the risks in my game were very
real.
Very real. The bigger the gamble you took, the bigger the possible payoff. But you could play it conservatively, too. It was up to you.
Right.
So when... characters took risks. If the risk isn't valid, if there's no way for you to fail, if you're not necessarily risking your life, if that's what you're putting down on the line, what's the point? So by the end of my game, for example, I had one character that fell to entropy and basically went to hell. Mm-hmm. And this is a character that someone had played for 3 years and was very invested in.
But they were satisfied with that ending.
They were satisfied with that ending.
Now,
I had one character... Yeah, I had
then
one
maybe
character.
What he's talking about, which is, I don't know how, you know, like my situation where it was just all to hell.
Yeah.
See, that's good.
I had one character that risked his life for financial gain and lost. And his character just died. Just flat out died. I had
and
one character.
He was good with that because he knew that that was
again,
what,
it was
choice.
A good death. That was the risk he took. That was the result. I had another character that made a major risk, and his risk paid off. His character regained his humanity, and it was the culmination of our campaign. He became human again at the end of our story.
Now, did you do this at the end? Like, you wouldn't have would you have allowed some of this happen before the game? And what happens when a character dies? Does the player come in with a new character?
Yes. Okay. And some of it did happen before the end.
Okay.
By the time we reached the end of the storyline, there were tertiary characters that were being played that didn't necessarily have the... I mean, they didn't have 3 years of context like some of the other right. characters. But they knew the game. They understood things the way things were working and were able to make characters that fit very well and added a different type of drama to the game.
Hmm.
And for an ongoing game like that, that is the advantage.
Okay.
It doesn't make things easier, but it can actually add a lot to the game.
I agree. I mean, again, I've played games where people have died a lot. Mm-hmm. And some games, you know you're going to do it, and it's fun. Like Paranoia.
Yeah.
Paranoia. Right. If you don't die, you're not...
You're wasting your time.
Yeah, you're just not having fun. And there are games where...
Call of Cthulhu,
exactly.
You make a character, don't get too attached. You know? Yeah,
right, exactly. And it's fun to watch the character get it.
Yeah. Whereas you have games like Amber where you're so invested in the character that you've auctioned.
Yeah. Right, and I think...
Auctioned?
Amber, you create characters by auction rather than...
Okay, we're bidding strength. Who wants the highest strength? I bid 50 points for strength. I bid 25.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like you are kind of bidding against the players in the room to create characters.
Amber is an amazing role-playing game. I have yet to get up the balls.
You have to be familiar with the book
Amber
series it's based on.
Definitely not my
type
of game.
Are you familiar with the books though?
No, not to be. I mean, I know the world a little bit, but I haven't read the book.
I have to admit, the game that I'm.
Do you have some type of like paper problem?
The game I'm most interested in is actually an old D&D game that I don't think fits with the D20 system anymore. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head.
The Badland.
Blood quests, blood stone, something.
Somebody's yelling it out in TV land.
I know. I'm so sorry. But long story short, you play a family line, and your points are dedicated towards creating this family or this country, and then eventually it culminates in the one character that you end up playing.
Interesting.
And it sounded like a great idea to me.
Okay. Well, we should close that out purely because we are long on time. This is Matt saying it, not Aaron, so don't take a drink.
Oh my god!
You have to leave that
in. We should do viewer mail.
Yeah, but we want to close out on some viewer mail before Aaron has an aneurysm.
Okay, so we're going to do a real quick bit before we do some viewer mail.
In celebration of our gaming subject, I figured we'd discuss various gaming groups.
Okay.
Or just other geek groups in general.
Sure. So this is a versus?
It's a versus.
Okay.
All right. Versus your average group of tabletop geeks versus your average group of LARP geeks.
Tabletop
role-playing versus LARP role-playing.
I say the LARPs.
Tabletop.
No,
every
listen,
time.
Listen. I'm telling you, those LARP guys can be kind of scary.
Yeah, they're I would say the scary LARPers.
The LARP ones like actually have costumes with knives and stuff, okay? You know. Yeah.
And these are the same people who go to like Ren Faire.
That's
yeah, it's like, I think that they would chop them up with their
They've swords. Got birds and shit.
Okay.
Science geeks versus theater geeks.
Science geeks.
Well,
I'm
it's
a theater.
So sad, nobody's on the theater geeks
I'm
side.
A theater geek.
I don't know.
Science geeks would blow them up.
Yeah, Matt showed me something that some science geeks made. It was a miniature,
Which one? The
paperclip shooter?
Yeah, the paperclip shooter.
There was a paperclip shooter, and there was also the paperclip mine, which like embedded a paperclip 5 inches. In,
Okay. Your average group of Comic-Con convention attendees versus Anime Expo attendees.
Oh, I was at both. Oh, yeah. So were you guys.
Both
were
anime.
Anime.
Yeah,
Comic-Con looked a little under...
Can I tell a really fast story?
If it's fast.
Really fast story. All right. Gen Con. There was a guy playing werewolf. He brought his girlfriend. All right? She was bored out of her mind.
I told you this.
Okay.
You told me this?
Yeah. All right. So anyway, do you want to tell it then?
No, go ahead.
All right. So bored out of her mind.
But she knows basically how to play werewolf. Now, it's a LARP, right? Now, within the LARP, if you enter Kreenos form for a werewolf, which is big, nasty, icky form, in order to represent this within the live-action role-playing game, you raise your arms above your head.
Okay? Like a big
creature werewolf. Now, also, if you're playing a vampire and you're drinking somebody's blood, you run your hand across their neck and you tell them that you're drinking their blood. Anybody is within limits if they're just outside the game. They're without limits if they're not within the game. So, anyway, she goes to the bathroom.
She's not a gamer.
She is not a gamer.
She's there with her boyfriend.
She's there with her boyfriend. She goes to the bathroom. She's in the line for the bathroom. And some creepy, weirdo geek boy runs up to her and runs his hand across to her neck and says,
"You're bitten.
You're bitten.
You're lunch."
And she's so ticked off that she raises her arms above her head like a big Kreenos form werewolf, and he runs off. Just runs screaming. Revenge.
Yes.
Moving on.
Sad story.
Okay. A group of Xena convention attendees versus Star Trek convention attendees.
Xena.
All those lesbians against Star Trek guys? Are you kidding me? Those
think
Xena
about
girls
it, though, for
would
a moment.
Kick.
Just think about the image.
Bull dykes are scary, man.
Hmm.
Those girls would kick those people's ass. Those guys.
And last but not least, the line at the movies for the opening night of Star Wars versus the line at the movies for the opening night of Lord of the Rings.
That's the same crowd.
Same crowd. It's just infighting.
It's the same guys.
All right,
Matt.
Some mail. All right. Jennifer Alessi says, "I wanted to say that I absolutely love your show. I can't get enough of it." Well, this one you're going to get enough of it.
Yeah. Everyone's like, take the holidays off.
Yeah. I would love to hear more about your views on Ren Fair. Do you guys go to fair?
We should do a Ren Fair episode.
We'll do a Ren Fair episode one of these days.
She also can't find our...
Probably in May when Ren Fairs occur here in California.
Right. Yeah. She cannot find our cast on MySpace, so she wants a better link.
Yeah, I already emailed her.
Okay. We have one. This is Mark A. Seifert. He let us know that there is a fan-made rendition of H.P. Lovecraft's The Call of Cthulhu. We'll put the link on the website.
Yeah, I've got one here.
That's been on our forums before, too.
Hit it.
Mark wrote us and said he just listened to episode 112105. That's the one about kids and video games.
Okay.
Regarding your discussion on the violent in video games, there are some good points made, especially regarding parental responsibility. However, much was made about the parents cannot protect their children entirely. Peter, see, I know the difference. I mentioned the pornography he saw when he was 13 as an example. I say the example proves a different point entirely. Peter's parents did protect him from early exposure to pornography. The fact that Peter found this story significant enough to relate proves that his parents had educated him properly and protected him enough so that when he was exposed to pornography, it was a shock. And he says the same thing applies to video games. Yes, they might play a violent video game, but if you have taught your kids correctly, then they will know that maybe they shouldn't be playing it, or they should. They know that that type of stuff is wrong.
And they won't be calling their mom.
Yes, you don't have to shield them from it. You have to arm them with the tools to understand it.
Okay. Dustin Kramer says, "How about you guys cover the best martial arts movies in recognition of the death of Pat Morita? Ironically enough, the Karate Kid movies probably shouldn't be included in the best." Here's a hint. If you ever go to the Karate Kid movies, the first one, look at the guy who loses to Johnny. Right? Now that we've seen a lot of martial arts movies, watch the guy who loses to Johnny. He is the best martial artist in the entire movie. He's awesome. He's incredible.
Wait, blonde bad guy?
Yeah, Johnny beats him. The blonde bad guy beats this guy.
Uh-huh.
He's just he's useless karate guy number
four. Oh, right.
And he is the best martial artist in the movie.
He's the best.
Yeah.
He's the best.
And he gets his ass whooped, but it's hilarious to watch how good this guy is and watch Johnny beat him with, like, a snap kick to the groin.
Well, it's not easy to lose. You know, you have to be pretty good in order not to get...
Oof. I have one by... this is from John B.,
Hi, John.
He says, "Thanks, geeks." I'm going to edit this down. "I never really considered myself a geek. I like video games and Star Wars, but I really never obsessed over them. I played D&D and could DM and make characters, but I didn't play often. A number of months ago, I finally got down to downloading a new version of iTunes with podcasting. I was intrigued, started randomly typing in things that interested me, and typed in video games and luckily I've hit Geeks On. As I listened, I realized I could relate and that you guys to what you guys were saying, and later episodes began to deal with more scientific stuff, religion, philosophy. I really began to enjoy the intelligent conversation and humor. I started watching anime, reading books, reading manga comics, loved both. I watched some Trek and loved it. I went to see Serenity and some other great sci-fi movies suggested by you guys, as well as playing more D&D and, well, as well as other pen and paper RPGs, too. I never considered myself a geek before listening to your show. It's not just that I didn't consider myself a geek. I really wasn't one. Your show has made me a geek, and it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. This sounds kind of cheesy, but my life has really changed noticeably and for the better. Thank you very much.
One of us.
Yeah.
One of us. Wait. One of us.
How many people are there on the Earth right now?
Many.
I want to say like 5 to 6 billion.
6 billion. One down, 6 billion to go. Geek
Welcome, John, my geekling.
Right. Jen Colby says, hey, guys, I'm a super fan. Just found you a few weeks ago via Signal. Really, really, really enjoying your shows. Don't know if you've covered this topic. What's it like to have a foot in geek and non-geek worlds at once? I, for example, am a brown coat geekling farmer. My farmer friends have no clue what a podcast is, or Serenity, or Dungeons & Dragons. My geek friends have no basis to connect with my work in local food system issues, raising pork and poultry on our farm, or on managing land. I'm not sure I'm the only one. Jen, so.
Hey, Jen, if it makes you feel any better, this is Don. I grew up working on dairy farms for money, and went to a farm school and everything. I totally know what you're talking about. I so dig where you're coming from. Geek Acres is where I want to be.
Geek living is the life for me.
All right. Nathan Churchill. That's a great theme song. Maybe we should adapt that. All right. Nathan Churchill says, I'm sick and tired of people calling themselves geeks when they're clearly not. The one thing you cannot do and be a geek is have a wife or girlfriend. Geeks do not breed. Geeks are forged in the heat of rejection. In fact, if you talk to a female, you are approaching cool. These rare geeks are to be looked up as the geek looked up to as the geek foot soldier has only seen pictures of woe men on the net, and funny looking blokes they are too. They have bumps and curves that make me feel kind of funny. So, if you have a wife or girlfriend, even if said lady is a geek herself, you have both left geekhood and entered another world, a world that few of us get to see, let alone experience. I quote Fox Mulder, what's a girl? I have seen the pictures. What lovely pixels. Yours rejectedly, Romeo Chesterton.
Yeah.
Romeo!
All right, that's it for me.
Yeah, man. I think you
good?
Covered that one. That was the one on everything. Oh, this one's one responding to your spyware thing, Don, which was Dan Williams said, sometimes when you get redirected to a site by spyware, that site is actually the target of the spyware attack. No better way to destroy business than to make everyone hate it. So you might want to check that out.
All right.
That's it, y'all.
Thank you, everybody.
All right, everybody.
This is an extra long one. Oh, my God.
We're making you all paying pennies. We're paying penance for being away for so long.
And we're going to be gone for Christmas.
And
so.
That's a 5 drink at the end of there for Aaron. About the
that's right. All right, everybody. Have a good
Have
geek
a
week.
Great Geek Week, kids.
Bye-bye.
Geek it out.